planning an event and wondering how you can give your attendees the best experience possible? Take advantage of customized meetings with Hilton that make it easier than ever to incorporate health, wellness, and great breaks. Hilton will help you build an extraordinary meeting that attendees will remember. To book your next meeting or event, go to meetings.hilton.com. Welcome to Gather Geeks, a podcast by BizBash, the place where people passionate about meetings and events come together. Here are your hosts, BizBash CEO David Adler and Editor-in-Chief Beth Kormanik.
Hi, David.
Hey, Beth. Here we are, another Gather Geeks podcast.
Our guest today is Kelly Helfman, Vice President and Brand Director of the fashion trade shows WWD Magic, Fame, Accessories, The Show, and Pool Trade Show. Helfman, who's based in Los Angeles, has more than 15 years of experience in fashion sales, marketing, and design. David, the business of fashion is a big business, and Informa certainly thought so when it acquired UBM.
Yeah, we're seeing a titanic shift in the whole world of trade shows with Informa. This is actually their first real year of owning so many trade shows. Now it's like Informa is number one and Reed is number two. So they're all battling it out.
Yeah, one of the things that Kelly understands is the job of trade show management has expanded beyond the once a year or twice a year show to year-round engagement with attendees and exhibitors. If you're not doing this, you're not doing your job.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds a lot more like the magazine business the way it used to be.
Right, tell me about it. Well, we spoke with her about reinventing trade shows to keep them relevant, knowing your attendee, the role of influencers, Instagram strategy, women in trade show leadership, and more. Let's listen. Hi, Kelly. Welcome to Gather Geeks.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing great. Great. Welcome to the show, and we're going to have a really lively and interesting conversation about trade shows today. And maybe we could start by just give a quick description of your job and the portfolios of shows that you manage.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am the president of West Coast Women's, which means I oversee the shows primarily at Magic Las Vegas having to do with women. So that includes WWD Magic, Project Women's, Stitch, and Pool Trade Show. And so part of overseeing these shows, really my primary duty and role is to handle all aspects from strategy, budget, planning, management, on-site execution, and really delivering what we promise to the industry. So making a great event for both the brands that are exhibiting with us and the retailers attending.
Yeah, tell us about the attendee. Who is the attendee of your shows, and has that changed over the years?
Wow, okay. So our attendees are people who have stores, and it's primarily small boutiques, specialty chains. So if you think about, you know, that mom and pop boutique in your local area, or maybe they have six or seven stores in your local area. It also is still department store buyers. We definitely have those, or more discount stores like a TJ Maxx, Century 21. But what has happened over time with the industry changing and going more online is that we've seen a large decrease in our department stores and a high raise within our online boutiques. So where we used to get 10, 15% of that department store buyer, we're now seeing closer to 5, 6%, and now a huge gain in double digits with online retailers. So that's the big change, really. We still have that high percentage of mom and pop boutiques and specialty chains. That's really our bread and butter, I would say. Mm-hmm.
Can you go through and give us sort of the picture of what the largest event is and what it feels like? Because I know that in talking to you guys over the years, you've made tremendous strides in the experiential side of what this is.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
And so, like, how many people, you know, and what does it look like? What does it feel like?
Yeah, if you think about it, the Magic Marketplace alone, because our Informa Fashion, we own, you know, shows in New York. We have Coterie. We have Project Men's over in New York. We have these New York Intermediate Marketplace. But Magic's really the largest event that we put on each year, and it's twice a year in both August and February. And that's over 2,000 brands. We take almost 1 million square feet, so at the Mandalay Bay and the Las Vegas Convention Center. And Magic's the overall name, right? But that show is really about 15 little shows within Magic. So, you know, WWD Magic, for instance, is your more commercial, mass market women's fashion. Then Project Women's is a little bit more elevated, contemporary. So you think of it like a department store. If you're walking into a Nordstrom's or a Saks, you have Saks as your umbrella brand, and then you go in and you have the different departments, so you know as a shopper exactly where to go. So if I'm a buyer for a store, I know, I have to go WWD Magic and FNP, which is our footwear show, to get everything for my store. And if I'm a little bit higher end of a boutique, I might just, and I'm men's, I go to the 10th and Project. So we make it really, we're kind of like we want to be the smallest, largest fashion trade show in the world, where it's not so overwhelming to come to our show, because we're really merchandising in a way that makes sense for the fashion community, and they know exactly where to shop. And great, if you have extra time, you can discover new areas and maybe pick up something. And, you know, because fashion's changing, a lot of these stores are carrying high and low brands, right? So there's a wide variety of price points they're now carrying, which that wasn't so much the case 5-6 years ago. So there's an opportunity to get a bunch of different kind of brands all in one shot shopping. I mean, this trade show is really built on the fact that you can do all your shopping for your show. I mean, I'm sorry, for your store, and also discover new brands, right? So you find the brands that you love and you know work well for your store, but hopefully you'll come to Magic, and we have about 20% of our show is always new, and you'll find these really great new brands to add to your store lineup.
So it's interesting that you talk about that as retail is changing and as the mix of what appears in stores is changing. I imagine you've had to respond to that. So what have you done to deal with that change in the industry?
Yeah, so we're definitely changing the trade show model, and we actually don't even want to refer to ourselves as a trade show so often. We're more of a fashion event, right? Because no longer is the old school trade show model really relevant for the fashion community. Yes, our main goal is to have a B2B buying experience, and we're connecting the brands with the buyers. But what we've had to do over the years is really add value to that and really evolve the event. So not only do you come to do your buying and you come to meet your stores, but now we have tons of educational seminars and panels where they're getting attendance over 400 people. And in those educational seminars, we're talking about how to go online with your store. A lot of these mom and pops don't know how to go e-commerce and really start their business there. And they don't know how to evolve their store experience. So the same way as a trade show operator that we need to evolve our show experience for you and have really cool activations and go digital and have beautiful decor and really hit on those five senses of, you know, you're eating great foods, you're hearing the perfect sounds that resonate with that community for those shoppers. We're trying to also help our retailers do the same for their stores and get some inspiration at our show. So I think how we've really evolved is just making it more experiential and inspiring for our attendees. And it's not just an order writing show, a B2B show. And that's been a challenge. We really had to evolve over the year and invest over the years in that. But especially to the fashion community, that is very necessary. I mean, these people, you know, people in fashion, they're the most influential. And to be quite honest, high maintenance, I love us, I'm me included, you know, we have a very high taste level. And so it's important that we are serving our community and with the needs that they have.
Right. So this education component that you talked about, educating your attendees on, for instance, building an online presence, is that new? Did you have education before? Or is this totally new?
So we've had in New York, in our New York shows, we never really have had that. We've been introducing that over the past couple of years. And New York's different. It's funny because at our New York shows, most people come in and then they go home at night. Where at Magic, everybody's flying into Las Vegas and you really are capturing them all night as well. You can capture them throughout the entire day and throughout their entire trip. Where in New York, you have your commuters, they come in, they do their shopping and they leave. Magic has been always successful. We've always had seminars, most of them focused on, you know, very B2B order writing, sourcing and whatnot. But what we've done is we've created more panels across the floor. So in addition to our normal seminars that we have in meeting rooms, primarily at the Las Vegas Convention Center. We've added these kind of on the show floor experiences where we have panels and we have influencers in our industries. And for instance, in streetwear, they have the biggest streetwear influencers and brands talking on a panel to Hypebeast about how the industry is changing. And in WWD Magic, we have, you know, for this upcoming show, we have somebody like Raven Simone talking about her style and her sizing and how she's able to express her personality through her fashion. So I think that's where we've really evolved, because it's a little bit more personable, more relatable, and it's exciting for our attendees. And then they know that the seminars that we've always offered are more just really based on business.
Mm-hmm. Are they, you know, everyone talks about the word experiential. Like, mm-hmm. What are they actually experiencing? Like, they're going to a conference, they're going to a seminar, but are you, when you're doing your planning, are you physically having them do things? Are they participating in ways that are different than the years past? Or is it just that you let it happen organically?
Sure. Great question. So I think we really, for our shows specifically, are touching on the five senses. You know, never before did we really pay attention as much to the music we were playing or the food they were tasting or what they were visually seeing in our decor and our lounges, our Instagrammable moments throughout the show floor. So those are the things we're really paying attention. There are some interactive elements for sure. I mean, all these mirrors that have come out with shopping where you take a picture on the mirror and then it looks up your sizing and you can go through the whole internet. We have experiences like that, but also more trend displays. So we're doing this upcoming show with Pantone, a really great trend display where we're going to feature their colors of the year and we're going to relate them back to our brands on the show floor. So our show floor will be, you know, participating in that. And then the Instagrammable moments for our, you know, and those are really just great photo ops that people can post, are super important. We have hundreds of those across the Magic Marketplace, anywhere from, you know, beautiful real floral walls to something that's hologram. And I think it's just an opportunity for our attendees to really come and have fun and not, and really get inspired, like I was saying earlier, of what they can be doing also in their retail stores to step up their game and really attract more shoppers, right? You know, obviously the panels are great because the audience can engage with the influencers and the celebrities we have there and ask questions, and that's great. I mean, we now have live music performances across the show floor, so they're able to have a cocktail and network. So networking's become a big part of the Magic Marketplace as well. You're networking, you're socializing, you're meeting with industry leaders, and then you can have fun along the way, right? So yeah, last show we had.
Yeah, I'd love to hear an
JoJo
example of that. Of the networking.
Yeah, so last show we had opening night cocktail hour. We have opening night cocktail hours across the entire marketplace in those individual 15 shows, right? So those are networking events for the industry to come together. So there's one in Project, there's one in Project Women's, there's one in WWD Magic Footwear. And so we give this opportunity for everybody to come together as soon as the show closes or towards the end of the show to all meet, have a drink, and really talk about their industry. And then with that, we'll have often live performers. So it could, you know, for Pool Trade Show, it's maybe an acoustic guitar player that really relates to that community. And then for WWD Magic last show, we had JoJo perform. And this show, it's going to be Ashley Tisdale, right? Because for WWD Magic, my buyers are mostly women in their 30s, 40s that are from Middle America. And that excites them. That's their girl, right? They love Starbucks. They love SoulCycle. They shop a little bit online, but they really like to still go try on. So we even get performers that really relate to each community. And we're very specific there.
I was at this conference that Engage, which is like the luxury wedding conference that they do. And it's very interesting that they create a very specific color palette and they plan it to the nth degree. And they try to do something different each time. Do you have like a sort of a template for planning? And do you also, is it about doing the same thing every year a little better, or is it about completely changing it up? Because as an experience, if it's the same experience, like how long is an experience last is kind of the question I'm trying to get at. When does it get stale?
It's so, Yeah. You know, I've been with Magic for 12 and a half years now, and we used to be able to call Sally it each show, right? The look and the feel of the shows didn't matter as much. Business was really strong and they didn't care as much. They would just come and write business and go on their way. But now we've really been challenged with society stepping up with the Pinterest and these beautiful photos. We want a beautiful show, right? So every show, that means we have to reevaluate and we have to redo it. Yes, there are certain things that we repeat, for instance, where signage goes or where our lounges go. But the color palettes change every, we have new carpet colors, new show colors every time, new creative. Our trend displays are different every show. Last time we talked about the 90s fashion comeback. This show, it's all about colors and Pantone. So we do have to evolve that every single show and reinvent it every single show. We have a deco team of about five that works with myself as, you know, the president and the brand leader of the show to really come up with that vision, what's relevant for that specific show and community, and then execute it for the show floor. So that's also like on the DJ booth, having a really cool quote and having different Instagrammable moments. You know, if my attendees more boho, maybe I have the floral wall, but if Project Women's, they're a little bit more New York fashion elevated, it's something else. So we reinvent that every single show. And I would say for Magic specifically, that started about 4 years ago, where we really invested a lot of time and commitment and people, in fact, into the show atmosphere, and the decor of everything, and really making sure that we paid attention to that.
So following up a little bit on that, does management sort of appreciate that? And also you as the manager of this group have to have the taste level and the knowledge that your decisions are kind of on target too, because you're making judgment calls. Like, how do you get inspired to know that it's the right thing? And what is the advice you would give to others to stay current, of course, besides looking at BizBash?
So that's a great question. I would say each president lives and breathes their community, right? And their segment of the fashion business. So I oversee Magic Women's, and my counterpart, Danielle, who oversees East Coast Women's, she's entrenched in East Coast, you know, all the East Coast brands. So Coterie, which is a little bit higher end, she lives and breathes that. She meets with those customers. She's in the weeds. Me for Magic, I am in the weeds with these customers. I'm meeting with them constantly. I'm visiting stores and retailers to understand their business, who their target shopper is, who's the end consumer, what's happening. You have to, as a show producer, really be in the weeds of your business. And as hard as that is when you get a little bit more high level, to you want to get yourself out of the weeds, right? You can't talk to every customer and handle every issue. But ultimately, it's the only way for you to really know who your end consumer is, right? And so I am in so many groups where, whether they're buying groups or they're organizations like KAMA, which is the Korean Apparel Manufacturing Association, which makes up a lot of my brands. I'm constantly meeting with them, talking about their business, understanding their target audience. So that's number one. You definitely have to understand the taste level through your industry. And that changes from every single show that we have within Magic. You know, the streetwear guys, they're meeting with Champion and they're meeting with, you know, Hypebeast. And it's a different model for each of us. But I would say you have to stay in the weeds and not get too far out, because once you do, you're really not able to speak to that community properly. And for your second question, yes, I would say Informa, our new owners, are so behind the fact that experiential and deco is such an important part of these fashion events that we're putting on. Probably more than any other industry. I think every industry really requires it, but because it's fashion, I mean, that's what we do for a living, right? We're about the garment, the detail, everything, you know, it's about who that girl is or who that guy is wearing it. So we really have to pay attention to how we're producing our shows and evolving them. And so thank goodness that Informa has been really great to understand that. In fact, when they purchased us, the CEO out of the UK made a very public announcement that they're going to be investing $15 million in the fashion events that they now acquired over the next 3 years to really invest a lot in the experiential part of it and yep. the deco part of it and launching new things.
Kel, since you brought up the acquisition, let's talk about that a little more. So UBM was acquired by Informa, and you mentioned this investment specifically in fashion. Tell us where you're envisioning that money will go and any new directions you might be going as a result.
So we'll go to experiential. I think they're very keen on upping the game there and continuously trying to evolve and invest. I think a huge majority of it, though, will go to attendee acquisition and really investing in our data, how to target attendees, get the right stores and attendees there. Because we've merged three main fashion groups. So there was Advanced Star, which was primarily Magic. There was E&K, which was Coterie. And then you had BJI, which were also New York market shows, Fame, Accessories to Show, Moda. All three of those are now together as one. And so our data all combined, and it's great data, but ultimately we could be doing a much better job to clean that up, target people correctly for the specific shows, and really invest in getting more attendees to the show. And then guess what? You know, our exhibitors are going to be happy. Business is going to be great. It is great, but we need to make it even better. So I would say primarily attendee acquisition is going to be our main focus with that investment moving forward.
What are the trends in attendee acquisition? It's no longer send an email and have people come to an event. Like, what is magic, literally the magic now, if you can give everybody your secret sauce?
Yeah, I mean, I have so many opinions on this. I think we all need to do a better job just targeting. So, for example, when you're on Amazon or if you shop on Mr. Porter or Net-a-Porter, you bought this black Givenchy belt, okay? And then my emails from that point forward from Net-a-Porter are very targeted. Hey, we know you bought this black Givenchy belt. We just got a black Fendi belt that we think you're going to love that was very similar for less money. You know, here's the link to that. Those are the emails I open. So if we're going to continue with a very hard push on attendee emails, they need to really speak to the audience. So no longer can that be, hey, Magic has 20% new brands, come shop it. I need to be speaking specifically to the attendees for WWD Magic much differently than I speak to the attendees for the Children's Club show. So that's number one for attendee emails. Social media. Social media, we should be collecting everybody's Instagram handles and talking them through Instagram. Instagram is really the lead right now for the fashion community. People are using it to sell direct to consumer. They're using it to definitely sell B2B. So my brands are contacting stores that way and vice versa. So ultimately, we need to be communicating with them through their social handles more because guess what? They're logging on to Instagram every day and they're deleting our emails. So we need to do a better job getting that data and then contacting them that way. So I definitely, if you're not doing that already, that's something you need to be doing. And of course, we're all doing digital marketing, right? Where if you Google something, we come up first and we follow you around. And that's very important. But ultimately, when it comes to fashion, we have to speak to our community the way they like to be speak to. Is it through text? Is it through an app? Is it through social media? Email and not so much. Yes, direct mail is coming back for my segment of the business. So it's really about what works for your business and what works for your audience. It's different for every one of our shows as it's different for every single business out there.
What is the range of difference? I mean, email is still
within our
a mover, yeah. Right?
Yeah, it is. You know, we get a really good open rate, actually. I'm pretty proud of it. And I think that emails are still very relevant. It's just the content within the emails that we could do much better at the targeting of our specific customer. Because we've all combined all those three fashion groups that I just mentioned, what we've done is we've been addressing New York Women's Market or Magic. But what we really need to be addressing is more specifically the show brands and really resonate with the audiences we're trying to talk to. So it's very different from even just within the women's portion of Magic. The way I talk to the Stitch community, and Stitch is more of your Karen Kane, Johnny Was brands. It's a little bit more of a mature audience. is absolutely different than the way I talk to Pool Trade Show, which is emerging artisans that are mom and pop brands making jewelry out of their garages.
Right.
So you cannot talk to all of those segments of the business the same. And so I think it's really this fashion investment is going to go to really targeting people more correctly. And that goes not just for the attendees we want to come, but really the brands as well, right? So as president of the shows, I oversee sales, and that's our bread and butter. That's how we make our money off selling booths for a living. So we need to make sure that we're targeting our customers to the right degree, so they also want to come into the correct show and they really understand it properly.
What does an Instagram post look like that you're targeting for a specific show?
You know, there's so much that goes into one post, okay? It's everything. One feed post, I'm going to forget stories for a minute, but what we put into one feed post, is pretty amazing. Everything from the girl that's on there, the influencer, if we're using an influencer, she needs to be known in the community that we're posting for. What she's wearing has to resonate with the different boutiques and excite them. The color and the filter of the post. So to make sure that our feed is beautiful. So when somebody clicks on WWD Magic, the feed makes sense in the color palette, and they're called presets. Your pictures all have that same coloring. So we're doing the timing. We're talking about timing of the post. We get most of our action and views when we're doing it about 10 to 12 during the day. So you have to do it at a certain time. You have to do a certain amount of posts, not too many though, because you don't want to oversaturate your feed. You have to do. So if you don't have somebody specifically paying attention to social media and you're just posting when something excites you or comes to mind, that's not, you really have to have a serious strategy behind this. And the fashion community is doing this just amazing. So to keep up with that, right? I always give the example of my boss uses this quite often, this analogy. So we always talked about bringing back runway shows to Magic. We used to do it back in the 90s and early 2000s, and that's a big part of fashion, right? Like, our attendees used to love that. And should we bring that back? We stopped doing that quite a while ago, and we put that investment back into the show floor. Well, the problem with bringing a fashion show back to one of our fashion events is that we can't do it as well as our industry. When you go to Milan Fashion Week or you go to New York Fashion Week, these fashion runway shows are millions of dollars. They are with the top models. They are with the top agencies. So for us to be able to put on a show like that is probably not in the budget. So don't do it. It's the same thing with social media. We have to be so careful that we can do it as good as our industry. You have the most beautiful Vogue post and the most beautiful Teen Vogue, even Marie Claire, all these different fashion photographers. So we want our feed to be up to par with the rest of our industry. And so I think that it's really important to be realistic, but also aspire to be just as good.
But you think in social media, you can compete as opposed to the fashion show. You're making a judgment call that yes, mm-hmm. that one you can be an equal.
Mm-hmm.
Correct? I mean, that's kind of what I'm hearing.
And yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that you have to strategize behind it. And I think that for every industry, because Informa owns, you know, the boat show, and there's a cement show, and every industry is absolutely different. But I would say with fashion, it's relatively hard to keep up. And so that's why the investment into just social media alone and talking to our customers and anywhere from how we approach somebody on a DM, a direct message, it all means something.
We're going to take a little break and come right back after this message from Hilton. So when's the big event? Hilton's here for planners with their exclusive customized meetings. Become a wow maker and save time by letting Hilton help you present an extraordinary event, one that leads to memorable and meaningful connections. Visit meetings.hilton.com and let Hilton help you. So what does a social media team look like inside of an event or inside of a division in your world?
So we have a relatively large group. So we have a marketing head, and under them, they have a social media team of, gosh, probably, you know, 8 to 10 people.
Wow.
And each of those people, yeah, that was huge. Each of those people are assigned to a show vertical. So I have a team that specifically just works on the West Coast women shows. And then there's a team that works on the East Coast women shows. There's a team that works on men's. There's a team that works on footwear. There's a team that works on sourcing. So we have dedicated people to strategize, execute, do the vision, work with the presidents on their vision, their branding. So a lot goes into it. I mean, and don't forget, we collect most of our assets from our show brands because we want, as an added value, as being a part of our show, to really be able to promote you on our social media platforms, on our website, in brand books, and email executions. So those people also have to collect a lot of content from our brand, and then they go through and pick and choose what works. And it's not just all about promoting brands also or our show. It's about lifestyle posts that resonate with each community. So, you know, maybe one day it's a picture of a beautiful beach with your feet in the sand, and then the next day it's a brand post. So you have to have a really good balance of that.
So is there like an editor? Like what it seems like is, like, we talked about, we're from the magazine world originally, and there's an editor mm-hmm. that has a 365-day relationship with a customer. And a show is a shorter period of time, but it seems like you're now trying to be that person as well, the 365-day-a-year, 64-day-a-year person.
Yes. Yes. No longer can you just operate an event or a trade show once or twice a year and then fall off the face of the earth. What's going to happen, and what's happening right now, is that you, as part of, you know, the fashion events, get an added value throughout the entire year. So not only is it about coming to Magic twice a year, but you get a promotion via email, social media, mailers, whatever it might be. Then we do these small kind of micro events throughout the year. I'm doing one actually tomorrow night with Miss Me Jeans, who's one of my largest brands on the WWD Magic Forum. We're doing an influencer dinner in LA as part of me partnering with them. I'm investing in this as well. We're inviting some of the top fashion influencers in LA. We're promoting the brand, their brand. We're promoting our show. We're just getting exposure. So we do something potentially at Coachella. We do something at the different markets. So there now is, you're almost like part of this family, and I would call it a membership, not call it a membership, but if you're part of this fashion group, you now get these different opportunities throughout the year, be included in brand books, be included in micro events, be included in influencer dinners. And it's way, a lot of our brands are big enough, let's say a Levi's who shows with us, or a Champion, they know how to do that, and they probably have a whole dedicated team to do that. But for a lot of our smaller brands, they don't necessarily know how to get into the influencer game, really step up in social media, get promotion and awareness. So the added value right there is if you exhibit at our shows, we'll help you there. We'll be a part of that strategy with you. We almost want to act as consultants for them throughout the year.
So are you actually planning those dinners, or are you just getting the right people there?
Oh, no, I plan them. My team plans them. So I have a brand director who also does experiential on the show floor, and part of their job when the show is actually not happening, I mean, besides all the planning that they're doing, they're coordinating these small events throughout the show. It might be something, I'm sorry, throughout the time of the year when the show's not happening. We're doing that, and then we're just finding the right brands to partner with that are interested, and then we're doing the invites, the press, everything. I mean, we work with a PR agency, so they help a little bit there as well. But no, we execute everything.
And what does an influencer dinner look like? And what is the most effective influencer dinner concept?
So we really have created a group of influencers that we have relationships with. I'm just specifically talking about WWD Magic right now. Those gals that we've been working with. So we have an agency that gets the correct influencers in, whether it be Annalyn McCord from 90210, or it's a all-inclusive size influencer like Alex May, who really promotes extended sizes in fashion. And so what we've done is we work with this agency, and they make relationships with these girls, and then they come to the show and they're speaking on our panels. Then throughout the year, when we have opportunities like these influencer dinners, they're definitely always going to be invited, and we partner with them on these. So they're almost become like the faces of WWD Magic. And then we meet other influencers through them. So they go in packs, right? So the way they like to come to a dinner is if all their friends are coming. So there's there's groups of influencers that all know each other. They would love to come to these dinners if their friends are coming. And so you invite the group. And, you know, often these are not paid.
Yeah, that's what so I was going to ask. How does that work?
No, they're not paid.
What is
so
it? What does it look like? Is it 15 people at a table? Is it a cocktail party? What does an influencer dinner look like?
Okay.
Take us to one.
Let me give you an example.
Okay.
I just did a vegan brunch with a brand called Coalition LA, and Coalition LA launched a new outerwear line with PETA. It's all vegan leather and faux fur. And so they really wanted to promote this new line. So we, WWD Magic, partnered with them, and we did a vegan brunch Thanksgiving. And it was the week of Thanksgiving, and we went to a great vegan restaurant in LA called Plant Food and Wine, and we invited, I would say, 25 people. And the 25 people ranged from PETA influencers that were very only vegan-centric to fashion influencers that had no idea about really PETA or they're not vegans. Then it has some conscious living TV producers. So very influential people, both in the animal, stopping animal cruelty world to the fashion world. And these people, yes, we definitely look for a lot of following and a lot of influence in their industry. So we invite them to this event. And again, it's much easier to get them to come if they have relationships with the other people coming, because nobody wants to come to anything where they don't know somebody. They all come. We serve beautiful cocktails, and we have gift bags for everybody. And there's signs on the table that says, bring awareness to this line and to animal cruelty-free vegan leather and faux fur, and post to make a difference. And so throughout the entire brunch and this beautiful meal that's all really Instagrammable photo ops, they're taking pictures, they're posting on their story, they're tagging that brand, they're tagging PETA, they're tagging WWD Magic. They go home, they open their swag bag, they're tagging all the brands that have donated. So right there, so we have raised so much awareness, not only to the cause and to the brands, but all the brands that donated. And this, again, is an added value. Everybody who donated to the swag bag were WWD Magic brands that I asked to donate to this event for free, totally complimentary, but being a part of the WWD Magic family, this is an added value to get some great free exposure. So it was a no-brainer. Yes, you need 25 purses, I'm in. So that's what it really looks like. And I would say some girls will want pay and some just do it off the relationship with WWD Magic. They want to partner us. They want to do more in the future with us.
So what about the facilitation of the room itself during that? Like when I do, we do these speaker dinners and we do Jeffersonian style dinner parties all the time where there's a person that facilitates the conversation a little bit. Does anything happen in the room? Yeah. Tell us
For
about
sure.
that.
We put less pressure on that. So I would say if I'm hosting with a brand, me and a lead from the brand will definitely facilitate some conversation, but we ultimately don't want it to feel too much like a directed, like you're here for this. We have signage there. We have the photo op. We stand up once everybody, after having cocktails, when we sit down, me and that representative for the brand will stand up, kind of tell them why they're here, what the purpose of today is, why they've been invited, and we're so excited to have them, maybe a 10, 15 minute spiel, and then we just keep it moving. So that is it. And then just enjoy the evening. Thank you for coming, bringing awareness to this brand or this cause, and enjoy yourself. And then really, they know the reason they're being invited is right. for the expectation that we hope they post.
But you are accentuating decor and things like that. You're putting effort and thought into that. That's a different way of thinking about things, frankly, than the past.
Yeah. You have this exposure. I mean, between all these girls, they have over 1 million followers that we invited. So that potential exposure is huge. So we definitely are kind of directing them on how we like to see this event go within that 15-minute talk, as we are also having the signage on the table and the signage in the gift bag. Like, hey, if you love what you received tonight, make sure to post on your stories and tag these brands. There's direction.
Do you envision getting to the point where brands will have to pay to get into those gift bags?
We're not there yet because, you know, these trade shows are expensive for a lot of these brands, and we definitely want to up the value for them. So like I said, right now we're not there. I don't want to do that. I think for being a part of our fashion family and exhibiting at our shows, this is an added value. And I think that we just keep it to a minimum right now, but eventually this is something that we could see as a revenue generator. Absolutely. Or think about a Coachella festival. I mean, I could do a gifting suite with all these WWD Magic brands for influencers going to Coachella that are going to be photographed in their outfits. That's a huge revenue opportunity for me. And a lot of these brands don't have PR agencies to do that work for them. So I can ultimately be that connector to these events for them.
That's a great point. Shifting gears a little, Kelly, you have been in this industry for a while. You rose through the ranks. You've been started, I think, selling booths. Is that right?
I started out in 2006 as a customer service rep. So, okay. So I was your girl collecting contracts from the exhibitors, making sure they paid on time, giving them their booth number, operationally setting them up for the show, getting them registered for their badges. I was, 24 years old, so I've just aged myself a bit. You know how old I am. But I started at the bottom. I got this opportunity from a family friend and interviewed, got the job, and have not left.
So that's pretty amazing. And I know to talk about the subject of women in trade show management and leadership, this is something you've started to think about systemically. So tell us your thoughts on that and what you're doing to help other women advance through the ranks.
You know, I just started thinking about it recently. Before, I never looked into it too much, but then I did see a pretty heavy male dominance in the leadership roles within trade shows. and that's okay. Yeah. But I just wanted to make sure that our women were getting a fair shot. Up until, a few months ago, we only had one female president in the fashion group. And now today, we have four total. So that, again, to give Informa kudos, is a big step for our fashion trade show industry right there, which has been pretty male dominated. Which is funny because fashion, you really think about women, but we now have four female presidents that we're working with. So I'm really happy. I think that Informa is taking a step in the right direction. And I do feel, because I have two children, they're 6 and 9, that I'm really a good role model also for my colleagues and for the industry that you can have it all. I have this big career. I am a mother. I try to balance it all. I'm a wife. I'm a friend. I'm a daughter. So it's really important that we're all supporting each other and talking our way through this, because the dynamic has absolutely changed since back in the day when it was just expected for the woman to stay home. And now so many of us are breadwinners and we're carrying the family and the company, quite frankly. So it's a lot. But I would say my colleagues have helped me through it and I'm helping people through it as well.
You know, I've been very involved in CISO. Do you know CISO? You're part of that? The Society of Independent Show Organizers. They're doing all sorts of initiatives for women, and they recognize the fact that there's an issue. And so I've been really proud of my fellow board members for really stepping up. But are there a couple of things that if you can wave your magic wand to help organizations do better that's still not right, to make it more viable for women to rise in the marketplace of our business? Is there anything else that you would suggest?
Well, first of all, congratulations that like you have been a part of that and you're doing that. That's incredible. I did not know that.
Oh, yeah, you should be part of our CISO CEO conference.
I would love that. Major kudos to
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Charlie McCurdy is very active in that and has been for years of president of Informa Events, I believe. And UBM has been very active in that, and it's really important.
So oftentimes in leadership roles, the emotional side of women in leadership is seen potentially as a weakness, when in fact, I would hope that a lot of people could see that as a strength. You know, often being empathetic or sympathetic in situations makes you such a great leader because you're more relatable, you're transparent, you have empathy for the customers. It brings an absolutely different aspect to some of the qualities that maybe a non-female leader has. And so I would ask that everybody opens their mind to that aspect and not just sees it potentially as a weakness, because through a lot of coaching and mentoring, I've actually learned to see that as something great about me. I am a very relatable manager. I am trusted in the workplace. I am very empathetic when it comes to customers, and I handhold them. And that is something that maybe not everybody has, but a lot of women often have that. And I think recognizing that that's actually a great quality and not a fault of anybody would be greatly appreciated. And that actually myself, with somebody who's maybe a little bit more strategic or closed-minded or more factual and fact-based, we would make a great team. Often, I'm the type of leader who goes with intuition and gut. And that's okay, because that's how I've gotten by, right? So you have people who are book smart and people who are street smart. And often when I partner, I'm a little bit more street smart than book smart. I'll be the first to admit it. But when I partner with that person, we make a perfect team, right? And so to really see that there are qualities that we can appreciate about women leaders that maybe we're adding a lot more value than you haven't had in the past. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for sharing that with us. Kelly, we really appreciate you joining us on Gather Geeks and talking about such a variety of issues within the trade show industry. Before we close, please tell our listeners how to reach you and learn more about your events.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great. I could talk trade shows and events and women empowerment forever. So I would love to hear from everybody. I am an open book, as I just said. So please, please, please follow me on Instagram. I'm at Grey Dahl, which is GREYDAHL. Best way is to DM me. Just send me a message. You can also email me, which I'll give you my email you can include in the notes. It's just kelly.helfman@ubm.com. So please reach out, stay in touch. If you have any questions or just want to chat business, I would love that.
Great. Well, thank you so much. This has been really eye-opening and I think empowering to the industry.
Oh, thank you. So nice to talk with
Thanks.
You both.
Okay, we're back in our podcast studio, and Kelly gave the example of how they cultivate influencers with events just for them throughout the year, and that's not something every trade show does, but should it? Should they?
I think that jumping on the influencer bandwagon is a very, very smart thing, especially staying so that trade show organizers can stay in touch with what's going on in their worlds.
You know, let's also note how Kelly is among the ranks of women in trade show leadership. And we explored this topic in depth in another episode of Gather Geeks, but it's a subject worth revisiting.
Absolutely. And I think that you're seeing more and more women. There's so many women in the business. They're just not at the top levels. You're seeing another huge shift in the fact that women are taking over the leadership roles in these big companies.
They're getting
as
the
well.
Opportunities.
They're getting too. The opportunities too, and they're it really is actually making a huge difference. So Beth, what is going on at BizBash?
You know, first I'm going to tease a bonus episode of Gather Geeks that's coming this week. You and I had a chance to talk with Andy King, who is one of the producers, or became a producer of the Fyre Festival. And Netflix viewers saw him on that documentary, and he came into our studio and had a chance to give us his version of what happened.
Yep, and that is really, I'm already getting so many people that want to listen to that episode. They're sending us their emails just so they get make sure that they get a link to it. We also, before we end our episodes, we always like to thank the people who help us put the podcast together. Claire Hoffman on the editorial side of this. Rebecca Pappas, who does our distribution and gets it out so that you can hear it. And Dave Nelson, who is our producer. So thank you in advance. And if you like what you hear, please comment in the boxes that are appropriate in whatever podcast service you have. So with that said, Beth, what do we do?
Gather on.
Gather on.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you like what you're hearing, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. We can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Player FM, Google Play, and Pocket Cast. Be sure to leave us a rating and review. It helps others discover the Gather Geeks podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. You can leave feedback on Twitter @GatherGeeks or leave us an email, gathergeeks@bizbash.com. We hope you'll join us again for the next episode of Gather Geeks. Until then, gather on.